Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
White Sox! White Sox! Go, go, White Sox!
That ball hit deep, way back! Deep to left field!
Holy cow! Carlton Fisk has put the White Sox ahead!
Jimenez leaves the ballpark! You can't put it on the ball!
We got a chance to do something real special.
All right, sit back, relax, and strap it down. It's time for the White Sox Talk Podcast.
Hey, everyone. Chuck Garfine here. You're listening to the White Sox Talk Podcast, brought to you by Wintrust Community Bank, your home for White Sox checking with free ATMs. Nationwide, go to the special White Sox webpage, www.wintrust.com/Sox. Okay, hope you all had a great Christmas. I also hope Manny Machado and Yonder Alonso had a great Christmas with their families together in Miami, talking about family, the importance of family, spending time with family, especially from spring training through October. Pat McGann, I think that's the lesson this holiday season. It's family.
It is, yes.
Pat McGann.
Come together. Stay together.
Stay together. Pat is our guest on the White Sox Talk podcast. Chicago comedian, White Sox fan.
Yes, for sure.
White Sox.
You know, I used to have a podcast, the White Sox.
What happened?
And it went away. It went away. But it's been replaced by, I think, you know what? Their announcer wanted to do it. My guy, I'm blanking on his
name.
Jason Benetti. God, yeah. I can't believe I just blanked on his name.
Yeah, and then he did
Love
one
him.
With Matt Davidson.
Yes.
And he went away.
Yeah, and then it just kind of, it fizzled. But I think that the appetite for the White Sox podcast has been satisfied by what you're doing. And you're on top of it, and the episodes are dropping continuously and on time, and it's great.
We try to feed the beast, as they say.
Yes, because the beast does have that appetite, you know, and I think there was a void in it. And that's why ours was just never, like, inside enough baseball. Mm-hmm. And that's what people want from a baseball podcast, you know.
Well, they also want some humor. You can bring some humor. But should we talk about Machado first?
Yes. I'm sorry. I just went off on that tangent.
Well, no. It's funny because, like, I want to talk about other things. But when we're in this moment, like, all White Sox fans can talk about or want to talk about Machado, Harper Machado. And I try to warn everybody, there's a chance.
Yeah.
They may not get him. And if they don't, that's okay, too. But it would be really awesome if they did.
It would be amazing. And I am not even, like, teasing myself about the – either of it becoming reality, Machado or Harper, because I just don't want to be, you know, because I'm already so excited about what's going on. They are so positioned to be successful in the next couple years, and this would be huge. It would be icing on top. Like, I didn't see it coming. I didn't think that it was possible. And then you realize, you know, how much money they have to spend, and that, you know, I think it's clear the upside of the very, you know, near future. So why not? I mean, now it's just kind of like, I don't think it's on the White Sox. It's on these two. And if they don't decide to come here, then I don't blame the White Sox. Yeah, I blame them. I honestly don't. You know, it's just kind of like one of those things. Like, because I love that. That's what you got to do, the free agent thing. Mm-hmm. You know, and that was the model to be successful in baseball for so long. But I love that the White Sox have gone back and developed this team, this future. And it sucks that they're not going to have Kopech next year. That's a bummer, but...
They'll have Aaron Bummer.
Yeah, right. I know. But do you think, I mean, what do you think? You know more about it than I do, obviously.
About what?
About either of these guys coming or Machado.
So I keep hearing different things.
Yeah.
From pretty good sources, so I don't even know what to think. I mean, I've heard he's deciding between the White Sox and the Phillies, not even the Yankees.
And then I just saw something today that said that he doesn't like Philadelphia.
Right,
so you drive yourself crazy really trying to follow it. I thought that the Dodgers trade was interesting. You know, that seems like they're going to try and, you know, make a run at Harper.
You don't know.
Yeah.
So how do you think the conversation went over Christmas between Alonso and Machado?
Well, it was probably in Spanish, and I probably wouldn't understand it. But I think it was probably like, hey, come on, you got to – I was surprised at that trade because of Abreu.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. I mean, I have some great brothers-in-law. Brothers-in-law, is that how you say it? Brother-in-laws?
Yeah, brother-in-law.
I mean, is that a thing, though, that you're dying to work with your brother-in-law? Maybe.
Well, happy life, happy.
Happy, yes. True. So life. That's the sisters, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So that, yeah, that does make sense. It would be awesome. And it was funny because someone had put it out there, like the day before the trade, that, hey, this is probably.
Buster Olney, I think, did. Or Ken Rose. Ken Rosenthal.
Yes, Ken Rosenthal. Yeah. And he tweeted it. And then the next day, the Sox made that move.
So do you think Ken Rosenthal tweets it? And Rick Hahn goes, yeah, that's not a bad idea.
No, I think Rick Hahn was ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
And then, but it shows you also what an incredible job that they're doing, you know? And it's just like what they have coming in the pipeline, because you forget about names like Micker, Adolfo. Like, there's names of guys that aren't even being discussed that are highly touted.
I'm dreaming of the day when I no longer have to watch the minor leagues.
Right.
I love watching it, but, like, you know, there will hopefully come a day where I'm not on MILB TV my computer at 10:30 at night with my wife wondering, what are you doing? Oh, I'm just watching a minor league baseball game in freaking Kannapolis.
Do you get a kick out of that, seeing these guys at these, you know, at the farm cities in those towns, and then when they get called up here? Because they probably see you and they recognize you. Like, you're something that connects them.
It's weird. They seem to be impressed with me just because I'm where they want to get to.
Right.
Like, their dream is to get to the major leagues. So they see someone like myself who covers the major league team. I think I feel like they like, oh, that's a carrot. Like, if I'm talking to me, if they're talking to me, they're thinking, oh, that means I'm, you know,
right.
This dream is becoming more of a reality. I think that's what's going on.
And do they appreciate that you're giving them press with that when they come to Chicago, that they'll talk to you because they know you, they're comfortable with you?
Well, by the way, I'm supposed to be interviewing you.
I'm sorry. I'm just I'm fascinated by that part of it.
I'll say this. All these guys are just, they're great guys. That's what I love about it, is that, you know, they're down to earth. They're competitive. They get the rebuild. They want to be a part of something special.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're just, you'll see it at Sox Fest. Everyone who has been there were there last year, and they'll be again there this year. They embrace the fans. Like you get so much attention from these guys,
right?
You know, but in the past, the players were like, oh, Sox Fest.
yeah.
I'll do what I have to do. These players, like, they can't wait to go to Sox Fest and meet the Sox fans.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great year, whether they're, even if it will be a season where, even if they are, and I don't think they're, I think they're gonna be much better than 500, but
much better,
that they're gonna have like electricity in the stadium that they haven't had since the post 05 years, you know, because 05 kind of snuck up on people, and, you know, big crowds came out towards the middle of the season, and then, but now I think people are so excited that it's going to be some fun years.
What I like is that, you know, they may not get Machado or Harper, but you're already hearing guys like Yonder Alonso and James McCann, who they got from the Tigers, already say that they know what's coming. All these players know what's coming. So they may not be able to get the top two free agents this year, but as time goes on, free agents are going to want to come play with these players
because
they'll have a better chance to win. So I like that.
Is there a time they're going to decide by, like...
Tomorrow.
By the first of the year?
Tomorrow.
Really?
No.
I hope
they... I think Machado will be in the first couple weeks of January, and I think Harper might be later. I think Boris is going to want to move this thing at a snail's pace to try to get the most for his client, get as many teams as possible into it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't begin to think what Boris is thinking or what Harper is thinking. I want to talk about you.
Sure.
Okay, so I saw you for the first time. I was at Zany's, and you were hosting. And you weren't even, like, on the schedule. Or not schedule, on the...
Oh, yeah, on the calendar.
On the calendar.
On the website, yeah.
And I saw three comics or four comics that night. And then at the end of the night, I'm like, the best comic was the host. That was you.
Well, thanks, Chuck.
Yeah.
You know what? I loved that time, like, when I was hosting. I was the house MC, and I was doing, you know, Zany's is open every night. The only night I had off was Mondays. So I was doing shows Tuesday through Sunday, and doing like 14 shows a week. And there was a stretch where I did 9 months straight. And, you know, I started kind of late doing comedy, but I got that House MC gig and it kind of gave me so much stage time where I was able to catch up and, to a point where it was like, you know, I think I got like 2 years in within 1 year, if that makes sense.
No, that makes sense. It was like trial by fire.
Yeah.
And a whole lot of fire.
Yeah. And it was, they forced me to talk to the audience because I never liked to do that. But they said that they wanted the host to be welcoming, like find out if people are from out of town, find out if anything special is going on. So I would ask those questions and then start to get comfortable just to be kind of, you know, funny in the moment, like crowd work, they call it, you know, just kind of bantering with people and messing with them.
Yeah, you were really good at that. But you had to learn how to think on your feet like you had never had before, right?
Yeah, I think you just have to be comfortable. I mean, you're never going to like retrain your brain to think in a funnier way. I think if you can just be who you are, then it's just easier.
But there was no safety net. Like, you just had to go out there.
Oh, yeah. And there were times that it wasn't funny, you know? I mean, there's safety in that sense that you know you have some go-to stuff and you have material. But, you know, if you're doing, like, just the conversational stuff, you have to be on your feet.
How do you write your material? Like, because I'll watch a comic and I'm like, how did it go from a thought, an idea, to I'm now on the stage and this joke works or doesn't work?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, it's always changing. I used to really write. I used to sit down and write. And now I'll have something happen in my life, and I think that that's funny, and I'll just think about it. When I'm driving, I feel like I get a lot of thoughts. Like, I have a clear mind if I'm not looking at my phone or on the phone, you know. And then I'll maybe try it on stage, record it, voice record it, listen to it, and then kind of tweak it from there. And then there is still some writing where you kind of try and tighten it. But I feel like I'm writing less and just thinking about things more and saying in my head and trying to just say them on stage.
And there's a timing aspect to it, too, how you deliver the line.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Spacing. It's just all about that. Because there have been times, I mean, I do a little bit of writing and then I'll put it on camera. I don't really do it too much anymore, but I'll write it, it'll be in the teleprompter, and I won't land it.
Oh, you know, yeah,
I'm like,
yeah.
It reads so much better than how I just said it.
And it's almost two different voices, right? Your writing voice and your speaking voice. And I think if you're trying to find, like, you know, your real self when you're doing both of those things, and then it's just through time, and it's always changing, right? I mean, you feel the same way. It's changing constantly, like, your approach and how you do things. And
now, what I don't know how you guys do is how do you remember it all? How do you do it? You don't have a note card.
You just
anything.
Have triggers that it's just like you sometimes it's harder to remember the chunk, like the like it's almost like a category. And then once you get in that category, then all the other things just start.
It's There's
like
a
association almost. Yeah. And I change the order all the time. You're always thinking a little bit ahead. I mean, it's nice to be in the moment. That's a great feeling. But if you're not, always truly in the, you're kind of thinking ahead, like, okay, I'm going to go from this bit to this next bit. You know, and you try and be inside it as much as you can, but you're always thinking a little bit ahead.
I want to go back a couple of years. You were on Letterman in 2014. All right, so I want to hear all about this. How'd you find out first?
Sure. Yeah, I got an email. So I was working with a comic on state or out of state in Ohio. And he had just been on Letterman for like the 12th time, this comic, Nick Griffin. He was like Letterman's favorite comic. And I was opening for him. And he said to me, hey, they're looking for new comedians. I'm going to give you their information. And I sent in a tape. I had felt close with the previous booker who was booking the Late Show. And then he left. So I was kind of like frustrated. I was like, oh, I got to start all over. And then this happened. Sent a tape in. And then I got a phone call. I got an email about that exact date. I got a phone call, and he said, we're going to have you on, but I don't have a date for you yet.
What was that like to get that phone call?
I was like, are you kidding me? Because that was the only thing, the only show I really tried to get on. It was the only thing I really wanted. That was like my goal. And, you know, that was my guy watching growing up.
Yeah,
I just
too.
Loved him. He was phenomenal. And the experience was a blur. I actually got to do it a second time, and I'm so glad I was able to do that because I enjoyed it a lot more. It was kind of at a hard time. Stuff was going on, but I was able to at least, like, soak it in a little bit more, but yeah, it was a thrill. He was so nice, very welcoming, standoffish. Like, I didn't have a long conversation with him or anything, but he seemed genuine, you know?
Yeah.
And you realize how busy these guys are and how much they got going on the night of a taping, and they got people in their ear and guests coming in and out, and you know, it's a big, big production.
Well, who were the other guests?
Kevin Bacon, and who was the other guest? It was a band called, now we would say Devon Avenue. I think they said Devon.
Devon Avenue?
Yeah. But those were the guests. So I had like the Kevin Bacon.
Six degrees.
Yeah.
That's right. You're 1 degree.
Right.
You're 1 degree from Kevin Bacon. And then you're on Colbert in 2017. And I queued up the part where Stephen introduces you and he brings in the Chicago thing in there. You know, he had to say, from Chicago.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because of the Chicago connection. So let's listen to the first minute or so of your debut on Colbert.
Folks, my next guest is a comedian coming to us from Chicago. Please welcome Pat McGann. All right, I'm happy to be here. Just good to be out, right? Just good to be out. Got kids at home. My wife and I have three under four. Yeah, that's how people react. Some people ask me what it's like. Here's a fast fact. 75% of the asses I wipe aren't mine. Got one in preschool, one in pre-preschool. Did you know that existed? Pre-preschool. My wife's like, he wants to go. We gotta sign him up. He wants to go to school. It's like, he wants to go to school? He doesn't know what school is. He wants to go to school? Just walk him out to the garage. Be like, here we are. Yeah. This is our first day. This is a broom right here. We're gonna learn how to sweep today. He might be gifted. That's what my wife says. Like, yeah, he was eating a crayon yesterday. A purple one. Look like you after a glass of wine. Sometimes we'll take one. You know, I'll take one. My wife will take one, kind of divide and conquer. She took my daughter out the other night and then sends me a text. We're staying out. Thought you guys had some boy time. And just leaves me with the two little dudes. Like, really? The little guy doesn't even know he's a boy. Boy time. All right, text me when you're close so I can get rid of all the strippers and blow. Boy time, what do you do? You guys want to watch a game? Throw the ball around? Oh, no, you want to stand on that chair and flick the light switch on and off. What do you want to get into? I'll take all the Kleenex out of the box, one by one. That's awesome. No, don't worry about it. I'll just stuff them back in there. I'm just happy to be hanging out with the fellas. Yeah, we got to get out to Vegas.
There's a lot of your material is about your family life, specifically your wife. What does your wife think about what you say about her?
She's cool with it. I mean, I think that she feels like if it's based in truth, then it's fair game. Mm-hmm. You know, I try not to misrepresent anything. It's exaggerated, of course. I mean, that's what comedy is. And I do kind of beat up on her a little bit. I'm trying to actually be more aware of her perspective, her side, and really like how I'm, you know, I can be the worthless one in a lot of these situations. And maybe I need to lighten up on her a little bit. But she rolls with it. And I don't think it's mean-spirited. I've had a couple people actually say things. Like, I did a show in San Francisco, and I was opening for Sebastian there, and I got an email or a tweet or something the next day, and it was like, you know, you hate being married and you hate your kids. Like, why are you married? Why do you even have kids? Like, this, like, it's like, no, that's not at all what I was saying. But
it's the trials and tribulations of having children.
I think my wife has good perspective of it.
Yeah.
You know,
something that you said. I saw you last time, like a few months ago, and my wife and I would laugh about it, and then it happened. You go, you're talking about your friends. You do the bit where you're talking about your wife's friends get together, and they decide to plan something.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Can you do that?
Oh, yeah. It's just like when you go out, it's always everyone's exhausted, and they start drinking. They start making bigger plans. Like, yeah, we should all go to Australia. Let's just get a cottage on the coast. Like, that's never going to happen. It took us 6 months to put this dinner together, and three couples canceled today. Well, my wife loves to do that. She, like, puts me on the spot. Like, aren't they a fun couple? We should all go to Jamaica. It's like, you don't even have a passport. Shut your mouth. We're going to soccer tournaments every weekend.
Because we were out for dinner. Actually, we were out at a party, and there was Her, it was all her friends from growing up. And it took forever to get this on the date
or
the calendar. And then after that, the next day, they're like, let's all plan a trip next year. All us girls, we're going to plan a trip. And they were going to go somewhere internationally. And then they realized that the next time that they could all could do it was June of 2020.
June 2020. Did they book it? That is the best.
That's not going to happen. Is there a place you'd dream of performing? A stage, a venue? Like, this would be like the highlight for you? Or did you already hit that?
You know, Chicago Theater was it. I would love to do Chicago Theater where it's my name on the marquee. Like, that's a goal. That's what I would love to do.
Yeah.
I've been there opening for Sebastian. I did the White Sox scene that we did together in 2015. I think that would be really cool.
Now, you're opening up for Sebastian. What's his last name?
Maniscalco.
Maniscalco. That's a big deal for you. You're going all over the country.
Yeah, he's been great to me. He is, you know, I wouldn't say he's blowing up. He is blown up. He's just huge, and he's a great guy, great comic, and been good to me. Been taking me all over. We're doing Madison Square Garden in January. He sold out 4 shows there.
Okay, let's go back. So that a second. Will be. You just said we're doing Madison Square Garden.
Well, he is. I'm opening for him. But I'm very aware of that.
But you're a part of that.
I am, and it's great. And I'm lucky. I'm very lucky. Yeah. It's like, you know, I'm in for a wake-up call when I start going back on the road doing my own thing. But yeah, it's been remarkable to see him grow because, you know, we've been doing theaters, and then we'll go back to the town. We'll do like their bigger theater. Then we've gone back to these people's cities and done their arena, and it's amazing to see. This happening for him, and then also to be a part of it. I mean, to think that I could do Madison Square Garden ever in any situation. So I'll take it. I mean, probably it's a once in a lifetime.
All right. So I'm going to see you tomorrow night at Zany's. So tell me about your schedule coming up because you're in Chicago.
Yes.
Live.
Yeah. So I'm doing Zany's in Old Town tonight, Thursday. We're talking Thursday now. Yeah. Are you posting this tomorrow? Friday.
Yeah.
I'm going to do 2 shows Friday night. Saturday, I'm in Rosemont doing 2 shows. Sunday, St. Charles for a show. And then New Year's Eve, back in Old Town, the original Zany's, for 2 shows on New Year's Eve.
That's good stuff.
It'll be fun. I love doing Zany's. It's, you know, this is where I live. I can do my local stuff. I see people I know. Family comes out. And I get to be at Zany's, which is a legendary. You know, that was the original goal, to do Zany's. And I love doing it. And it's my first New Year's as headlining, so it should be cool.
Do you have any good White Sox material, White Sox fans material you can share on the podcast?
Not really. You know, it's so, like the things that are so close to your heart, it's the hardest thing. And I say that as realizing I make fun of my kids and my wife all the time.
Yeah.
But the White Sox, like, I don't know. I punch up. I'd rather make fun of the
Cubs.
Yeah.
Any Cubs stuff?
I'm trying to get away from some of that, though, too.
Because the Cubs fans are fans, too.
Yeah. I did an event for Anthony Rizzo. He has an event for pediatric cancer, and it's a mutual thing for him and I, and met him, and all the players were there. They were great guys.
That's the thing that sucks. These Cubs players, they're good guys.
They are good
guys. I wish
they
were a-holes, you know? They're
right.
Not.
But you know what? You get older and you realize that it's just a game, right? I mean, I'm still a passionate White Sox fan, but I'm not going to – my mom's a Cubs fan, so I have to be nice.
Really? Your mom? How did that happen?
She's a North Sider.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I find myself watching old Johnny Carson's on television. It's on Antenna TV. Do you watch these?
If I'm flipping through and I see it, I always stop.
Old Minds.
For sure.
I'm DVRing it at this point.
I should do that. Those shows are great, and it's nice to watch shows from that era where it's just like everything's less political, less on edge. Not saying things were better then, but just saying that...
You get away with more.
That they were just like, you know, relaxed, or I don't know. You know, it's our youth too. So it's like romanticized, right? But he was funny.
It started with me where I was like, because there's all this politics stuff they're actually obviously we're dealing with, and then I would notice, oh, they've got a Tonight Show with Johnny Carson from 1974.
Oh yeah.
What is he gonna say about what's going on at Watergate and stuff like that? And then the guests that would come through there. And I just watched one with Dean Martin.
Really?
Dean Martin comes out.
Drink?
With a drink and a cigarette, and he's wasted.
Yeah.
He's slurring his words. He's trying to, he called Johnny Joey on the air.
That's great.
He was talking about they had to beep him a few times. Bob Hope is on the set as well. Bob Hope is swearing. And by the time he leaves the set, he is stumbling and he can't find the curtain. Like, he sees the curtain, but he can't find the opening of the curtain. And I'm like, God, if this would happen today.
And now you can never do that, right? Then that Don Rickles, when he would come on there, Jonathan Winters, I remember.
Yeah.
That was what I remember. I shared a wall with my parents, and I just can hear that show through the wall growing up as I was, like, falling asleep, hearing the laughter, hearing Johnny.
And then they would just he would just outwardly make fun of Ed McMahon's drinking.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that he was, like, struggling with, right?
Like, going, he's got a drinking problem.
Yeah, issue.
Yeah, like, I think Johnny at one point said, Ed's away. And then he motioned, like, because the motion of someone drinking.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and he didn't want to, he couldn't say, but he just showed it what he was doing. Like, making fun of the guy.
He stopped,
he's an
too.
Right?
I think he had an issue, too, and he
had, like, a DUI or two.
Yeah, I know, yeah, Ed did. But then Johnny, I think, did he quit or something, too? I thought maybe he did.
He might have.
I got to do a festival in his hometown. They had this Great American Comedy Festival every year. It's in Norfolk. It's spelled Norfolk, pronounced Norfolk, Nebraska. That's where he's from, and they have a little museum there. You get to see his boyhood home, a theater that he gave money to the town and built a big theater. It's cool.
Is there still that feeling of you've arrived when you get on Letterman or get on Colbert, or it doesn't have the same cachet?
It doesn't have the same cachet, but it is still special for the comedian.
Yeah.
You know, and when anyone that I know gets to do it for the first time, or when I got to do it for the first time, yeah, that's validation, and it's, you know, it's hard to see your work pay off. There's different milestones, different things, and it's different for every career, every comic. So when you get to do something cool, I think you should always, you have to appreciate it because it's like progress.
Yeah.
You know?
When you got on Letterman, you talked about how you wanted to go a second time. Was it like, I mean, how many times did you watch the first time? You did it, and you want to study how you did. So how did you think you did?
I think I did all right. I was nervous. I screwed up one of the jokes. And unfortunately, it was a joke where I said my wife's name. And I didn't say it, so I felt really bad about that. I was glad that I recovered because I literally blanked out. Like, blanked out. Hadn't happened to me since I really started, but I was that nervous.
First time you blanked out on Letterman.
On Letterman, and I was like, I just took a beat and then remembered my next joke, but I didn't finish the joke. Because I got you get different, the laughter is different when you do a taping. You're not as in sync with the crowd. It's fun, and it's, you know, but it can be seem a little artificial. So it threw me off. Like, the laughter wasn't where it usually was. Mm. And it's like it changes your rhythm. And so anyway, that's what happened to me.
So when you went back the second time?
Second time, I was much more comfortable.
Okay.
And more like knew what I was saying. Realized what was happening as I was doing it. Where the first time, I didn't realize that I didn't say her name, really. I was, like, asking her, did I do that? She's like, no, I think you did, but maybe not. Maybe you didn't say my name. She didn't want to tell me.
Yeah.
But I didn't even know what I said.
All right, so I'll compare this to the first time I ever did a Sports Center.
Yeah.
I was 25 years old. I was working at ESPN, obviously. And I was so nervous, out-of-body experience. And then my agent at the time said to me when I got off the set, he called me, and he goes, you know what I love that you did? He goes, you didn't take out the driver. You were hitting three irons. You're hitting three irons. And I was like, I didn't mean to do that, but yeah, you're right. Mainly because I was scared to death.
Right.
I didn't want to hit anything out of bounds. I'm like, I'm going to keep this in the fairway. Keep it in the fairway.
Yeah.
I mean, now when you go on Letterman for the first time, are you trying to keep it in the fairway? Or like, you know what? I don't care. I'm just going to.
No, you want to knock it out. You want to
knock it out of the park. Yeah, I wasn't thinking
that. You got to try, you know? And I want to get back on another one of those shows. Like, I feel like I have another set ready. I'm going to submit soon. And, you know, hopefully, maybe it'll be different. Maybe it'll be Colbert again. Maybe it will be Fallon. Or maybe it will be Kimmel. I don't know who's going to bite. Hopefully one of them. But I think that even now, like, I'll be more in the moment. Because I'm at 10 years now. Like, every year you do it, you just get more comfortable, more. You can always have a bad moment, like that blanking out thing. That can happen to anyone.
Yeah.
But I think you just are there's less things to be nervous about.
Is there a difference for you, like, to do a Kimmel versus a Fallon at this point?
Or no,
does
I'd,
it not matter?
I would love to do them all. I would love to experience all of it, you know, and establish a relationship with all of them. And, yeah, it would be great.
So how do you do that? Do you have an agent?
Yeah, I just got an agent this past 6 months. So we're working through some things and getting on the same page. And hopefully, as this new year begins, try and get some stuff out there.
Yeah, it's going to help you with doing this tour that you're doing.
Yeah, it's great exposure. And Sebastian seems to be behind me, and he's been great to me, very helpful. And hopefully we'll continue that relationship too.
Can you give us a little bit, something that that's in your act? You like?
I know, it won't be funny right here, just the two of us.
Well, we'll put a laugh track in. Would that help?
No, I'm having my newest bit is, this is brand new. I only did this joke once on stage. So this is, I just read the other day about this politician took some money from white supremacists, which is terrible. Like, and they're pressuring him to give it back, and he should, because you should not take money from racists, right? But I'm like, what if everyone had to do that? Like fast food restaurants? Like, I'm sure they get a ton of money from racists. Like, racists love fast food. And what if we had to do that? You know, like, I would have been at my first communion party talking to my great grandma, like, hey, I really appreciate you coming, but I can't take this money.
Racists are keeping McDonald's and Kentucky Fried Chicken alive.
Yeah, I would think so. That's a guess.
I like that. But so you've tried out once.
I said the joke once, and I used Trump's name because it is Trump.
Yeah.
And some people tightened up, got really weird.
Yeah.
That now I'm just trying it as just a politician. It's really a joke about our grandparents being racist.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
my grandfather,
which I don't need to like shine a light on. My grandmother and great grandma, they were great. They were just from a different time.
No, my grandfather used to say stuff like. From another time, exactly.
Right.
He'd be 109 years old if he was alive today, to show you how old he was. So, like, yeah, he said stuff he shouldn't have said.
Yeah.
And I was just like, you just don't get it. You can't.
But we were evolving as humans. We're getting, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So thanks for doing this.
Thank you for having me, Chuck. It's a blast, man.
Yeah. When the White Sox get Machado, you can come back on.
Yes.
Your eyes just lit up.
Man, I'm telling you, if it happens, I'll be so happy because I'm not expecting it.
Yeah. No, don't. No one should expect this to happen.
Right.
I will say, and I don't want you guys to get too excited, but it does seem like it changes by the week. But I thought the chances of the Sox getting Machado, it feels like more of a chance of getting Machado than Harper at this point. That's how it feels. I could be wrong. But it does feel like the chances are increasing with every week. Now, I'll put it at a 30% chance. How does that sound? Does that sound good? 30% chance of getting Machado?
Yeah, it would be great. I think they're going to be great without him.
Yeah.
So it would just be icing on the cake.
All right. Well, that's going to be a wrap for this edition of the White Sox Talk podcast, brought to you by Wintrust Community Bank, home of White Sox checking with free ATMs nationwide. Can you tell I say this a lot?
Because you're killing it.
Doing off the top of my head. I'm killing it.
Much love for the sponsor.
Yeah. Go to their website. www.wintrust.com/socks, and I end every podcast tossing to Hawk Harrelson, who does a little read.
Really?
Yeah, Hawk says.
Love Hawk.
Amazing stuff. Hawk says, thanks, Art Chuck, and this edition of the White Sox Talk podcast is over.
Mercy.
I know. So, Hawk, take it away.
Thanks, Art Chuck, and this edition of the White Sox Talk podcast is over.
Ricky's boys don't quit, and neither does NBC Sports Chicago's coverage. Download the My Teams app by NBC Sports and get your White Sox anytime, anywhere.